From the Financial Times in London, I'm David Pilling, Africa editor, and this is FT News. The transformation of Joyce Mujuru from revolutionary hero and lifelong Mugabe comrade to opposition leader encapsulates the political turmoil in Zimbabwe. At 18, she left school to fight in the liberation struggle under the nom de guerre Spill Blood. At 24, she became the youngest minister in Robert Mugabe's first post-independence cabinet. By 50, she was vice president and a favourite to succeed Mr. Mugabe as leader of the once wealthy Southern African nation. Now, at 61, cast out of the ruling ZANU-PF party, she is hoping her People First Party will help lead a rebellion against the ageing autocrat. She spoke to me and my colleague, Joseph Cottrell, over coffee at a London hotel. What's the state of play? Can you just paint a picture, first of all, of the political situation for us?
The situation is volatile in Harare. A lot of people are on the streets. They are on the streets because they are vendors. Their wares are being taken away from them because sometimes they would use non areas for selling. And that's the only source of income. Industries have been closed. And you have a family to fend for. You have school-going children. You have sick persons. You know, Zimbabweans are hard-working people.
Yes.
But we have not been vendors like what you can find in West Africa. Zimbabweans have been either industrial, you know, workers or reputable farmers, or they have been qualified persons, be it teachers, nurses.
So the vending phenomenon is new?
It's now new, and that's the only way of getting income.
Right. What has happened to the opposition? I mean, the opposition seems extremely fragmented. And what is the relationship between People's First Party and MDC? I mean, are you prepared to work together?
We have an amicable relationship. We have started doing good things together. We have started to hold meetings together, demonstrations together. We have sent delegations to the regional grouping, which is the SADC, together when we wanted a good representation of our issues. But we are for peace, we are for unity, we are for love.
So what is your aim now? I mean, is it to contest the elections or is it to...
Yes.
It's not to foment an insurrection?
No. It's to change the government through the rightful constitutional approaches, which is through elections, because the Zimbabwe people first, we respect the constitution.
Do you think the previous elections have been free and fair?
You know, they haven't been. There's a lot of coercing and a lot of commandeering that has been happening. And we are saying through the grouping that we now fall under, which is working on improving the approaches that see every political party participating in at elections on a level playing field.
But do you think things can hold until 2018?
You know, one wouldn't really be sure whether we'll get to 2018, because some of it goes with nature, because our man is quite old, he's quite sick, and the situation is very volatile. And a lot of things have not gone on well. And right now they want to introduce bond notes. And those bond notes make Zimbabweans remember the previous stories of the Zimbabwe dollar when we went into a trillion, quadrillion, quintillion, and I don't know how many millions. And you now want to bring a bond note. What does that mean? Does it have any value within the region, within the international arena? No. Even within the country, we have coins that also have come in the guise of bond coins. When you go to a supermarket and you are asking for change, people refuse that coin. Instead, they opt for a sweet. And those who smoke even opt for a cigarette. The problem with Zimbabweans has been that we have not been up to protecting ourselves. We have not been questioning the government as to what they have been doing to us. Even when the Zim dollar went into quintillions, we did not ask about it. And when they introduced these coins, we did not ask about it. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of terrible things that the people of Zimbabwe have swallowed, which they shouldn't have.
So why did you swallow them? Because you were part of that, weren't you? I mean,
the problem is, you know, what has happened in Zimbabwe is when fear is combined with respect, a lot of things happen, and the leadership take advantage of that. You know, we are taught, we have grown up respecting our seniors. It's un-Zimbabwean to really challenge seniors the way it's happening now, because the seniors have failed to respect themselves. when I joined, I was a young girl. I grew up looking up to these people. And sometimes it takes time for a young person to see really that we are being derailed. And during that time, I decided to continue with my studies, even though I was a minister. And also the maturing was taking part. The exposure was also coming in because I was now going in rural areas, introducing programs, which programs they followed and destroyed. And there were issues that I used to question. Why beat up people when they are holding elections? And that we should be able to do programs that will bring Zimbabweans together, not programs that will separate them.
And what triggered your expulsion from the party? Do you take it at face value that they thought that you were plotting against Mugabe? Or?
Of course, it wasn't that I was planning to kill Mugabe.
Well, clearly.
No, not at all. He felt threatened.
He felt threatened?
Oh, yeah. He felt threatened, but for sure I never thought of that.
But you hadn't made a bid for the party leadership or said, you know, it's time.
You know what? The country.
For you to move on.
You know what? He started it. And he thought it was just going to end as a joke. I did not put it to mind because there were lots of things that I wanted to continue with. I carried on with my job. Diligently, obediently, respecting him. But because the issue of succession had been started in the Politburo by him again, he set a team, which team my late husband was part of. And the late John Nkomo, the vice president, was the head of the team. It was a team of three or four. They went, discussed, and were about to bring, you know, results of that. He refused.
What was it like working with Mugabe?
It's hard. You know, he's a headmaster. And you know what a headmaster does? He does his things by a whip. But without holding a whip, it's his voice.
Right, really?
Yeah.
What's the state of the demonstrations? There's been a complete crackdown on demonstrations, is that right?
Which is very unfortunate because these demonstrations have been peaceful. And to tell you the truth, when people really opt to go for these peaceful demonstrations, that's the problem, is the police.
Are the police being paid? I mean, many civil servants are not being paid. Are the police being paid?
You know, through social media, you hear some of the police are actually pouring out that they are doing this not out of their own volition. And when you hear rumors that try and think aloud, do you think these people who are beating Zimbabweans are real Zimbabwean police or they are hired thugs? And we don't want to take it as a rumor. So we are busy investigating whether they are real police or they are hired thugs. We want to know. Because sometimes you see them in a real, clean, crystal, new uniforms. And you say to yourself, if you are an ordinary police, why are you wearing, you know, starched, new, clean uniforms? Why? Then it might be something that is worth a while investigating.
Looking at some of the movements on the streets in Harare, do you think there's an opposition which is not part of the parties, which is very volatile? I mean, how do you interact with Tajamuka and these other groups which connect through social media?
You know, these are movements. These are not political parties. And what they are complaining about is exactly what is worrying Zimbabweans. And we are saying if the government had listened when these things were being raised, people wouldn't be where they are today. So, yes, some of them, we are talking to them because they are not political parties. They would want a stronger base, and which is a good thing because what they are doing, and we are also encouraging them to do that peacefully without any more destruction or causing of bloodshed.
How many members do you have in your party?
Right now we are mobilizing. Right now we are issuing membership cards, and I can't tell you how many we have at the moment.
Okay.
But taking it from the way how the parties have been attended, the average attendance of my provincial rallies have been 5,000.
Really? Right.
To six.
And as you've gone around the country, there's quite a lot of concern that there is genuine hunger in Zimbabwe. I mean,
Very much so. With a good agricultural policy and with the usage of resources, proper resources being applied towards the benefit of people, Zimbabwe shouldn't be hungry.
And do you have any idea of how many people face hunger? And
about 4 million, I'm told.
About 4 million.
Oh. Yes, I've been to the UN office, one of the UN offices, and the information and the headcount that they had was plus 4 million.
Could anyone literally starve, or are we just talking about people? I mean,
very
not
much,
just...
Very much so, especially those who live in the periphery, where the harvests on, you know, natural terms has been quite low in most years. Really, those ones will suffer most. For most of the years, those people have been doing away with their animals, and for now, they no longer have them. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine they have nothing to fall back on.
Where are we with the whole IMF deal and the borrowing again from the international community? I mean, the government has been pushing this, but what would you like the IMF and the World Bank and the Americans to do? Would you like them to say no, not while the situation is as it is, or would you like them to say we should re-engage?
I said the opposition party, how do we get to know how that administration is going to be fair?
I have one last question, which is about the helicopter.
You know, this one was, you know, when I was 18.
Right.
And you know how energetic girls of 18 are, and you are there facing a situation where you are supposed to be defending yourselves. So according to the white Rhodesians, it was to go and catch this little girl, this fugitive. So it's the fugitive who had now been given rudimental training about how to operate a gun. And after having been given how to do it in order to defend yourself, it happened.
Yeah.
They were now settling in order to land so that they could catch me. So I just did what I was taught.
So you shot and it blew up? Or?
Yeah, it blew up.
Yeah. So it's true?
Yeah, it's true.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.